Welcome to Journey Beyond Divorce on Divorce Source Radio. I'm Steve Peck, and today we continue in our new series, Navigating Divorce. And I bring you Karen McMahon today with Lisa Brick and a special guest. Karen, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve. We're continuing the series on navigating divorce, and we're going to be discussing discovering infidelity. And so, Lisa, you want to introduce our guest and kick us off?
Yeah, I'm so excited to have CJ Grace here today to discuss this such a tender topic with us. CJ is a journalist and the author of The Adulterer's Wife, How to Thrive Whether You Stay or Not. The Adulterer's Wife is a perfect companion to help you tease apart the emotional knots you're experiencing, step back to view your situation with some distance, and understand the what and why of your options, all with the perfect amount of her wonderful British irreverent humor and wisdom. And CJ's book is available on Amazon. I'm sure a lot of you are going to want to order it after you hear our show. Now, CJ, in your book, you speak about choosing confidants. Could you share with us a little bit about how you choose, what are the qualities of that confidant, where do you find them, what age do you use your children? You know, please come share with us.
Thank you so much for having me on your show, Karen and Lisa, first of all. And as far as confidants are concerned, well, your children should never be your main confidant, because then you're getting them involved in having to choose between you and your husband. You're going to be having very negative views about your husband and what he's done when you first find out about his infidelity. And you really don't want to be spewing all that venom out at your children. It will come back to bite you. You are training them to have unsatisfactory relationships themselves in the future. So most definitely don't use your children as confidants. When you deal with your children, you really want to try and be as neutral as possible and not paint your husband as a demon. In fact, painting your husband as a demon isn't really going to help you that well anyway. The best revenge is to get past the need for it. You really don't want to be grinding him into the dust. You want to be looking after your own interests at all times. And that means swallowing your rage, at least when you're with him. If you want to be angry, if you want to be venting, confidants are the people to do it with. And the best confidants are people who know you really well, have your best interests at heart, and actually can give you useful advice. You don't need a lot of them, maybe 2 to 4 people, and it's always a good idea to have confidants of both sexes, because as a woman who's suffered infidelity, you're going to get a different view from male friends than you will from female friends. He's going to give you possibly some useful insights about your husband's behavior and how to deal with it. You really don't want to just get the poor you, oh, he's such a cad, how can you put up with him, he's so dreadful, oh, I feel so sorry for you. Well, okay, but that doesn't really help. You want somebody who's actually going to be bringing you up rather than making you feel more down and giving you useful advice.
You also mentioned, and we know it from the work we do, that it's really important to find confidants who know how to be discreet.
Mm-hmm. Blabbing and blobbing your heart out to somebody and then finding that it's the gossip of your community, not a good idea. Doing it to somebody who works with your husband, for instance, not a good idea. Doing it with somebody who's in the same social circle, things will pass on from one person to another, and you'll get a whole Chinese whispers. What you said may be distorted to something even worse than what you actually mentioned in the first place. So you're absolutely right. You need to find people who are discreet rather than people who are desperate to hear the next episode of the soap opera that's your life.
I want to jump in here just for our listening audience, because I know that while the name of your book is The Adulterer's Wife, and we are referring at the moment to the male who cheated, my understanding is everything that you've read really goes across whether you're the husband or the wife, whether you're in a homosexual, a heterosexual relationship, that the advice that you present in this book is really solid for everyone. Is that pretty accurate?
absolutely. The devastation is the same. Whether you're male, female, gay or straight, it's the same devastation when you find out that the person that you loved really isn't loving you the way you want them to love you. So there's no difference. I wrote it from the point of view of women because I'm a woman, and that was my experience. And it is true, and studies have shown that males are more likely to be unfaithful than females. It is an evolutionary imperative for males to go out there and spread their seed. And females are stuck looking after a baby for 10, 15 years. So it's in their primal system to want to stray. And it's only the cultural veneer we have, civilization, that in some ways keeps things more at bay. But there's no studies out there, as far as I know. Most, almost all studies will show that, yes, women do stray, but men are much more likely to stray than women.
And what I've seen that's very interesting in our day and age, an odd phenomenon is occurring. While a male spouse may stray, their commitment to being with their children and having a powerful and positive impact in their life is still present. So they're not just putting out seed and then dumping, you know, going someplace else. So I'm very happy to see we see more and more that fathers are taking a very, very active part in parenting. And for all you dads out there who are doing that, you know, three cheers. Excellent. Now, when we talked about finding confidants, I want our listeners to also realize that it can be friends, it can be family members. You can also call upon clergy and professionals, whether it's a coach or a therapist, because you'll know that you have confidentiality working with clergy within your faith tradition, working with professionals. And before we pop into another subject, I also want to add something about why it is so important to leave your children out of it. And it's because involving the kids is damaging to their psyche. Younger children have no tools to manage adult emotions. It will just frighten them, and it will create a disharmony within them as they're trying to figure out who the good guy is and who the bad guy is. And it actually rips their self-esteem, their self-worth, and their self apart. And while you might feel that older children can handle it, older children also tend to resent you, and understandably, for bringing them into the middle of this relationship when they love both of their parents and they identify with both of their parents. So remember, leave your kids out. Now, another technique, in addition to confidants, is the idea or the practice of journaling. And journaling is whether you're doing it with a computer or on paper with pencil or pen, it's writing down your thoughts and emotions as they flow. And the reason it's so valuable is because it allows you to be mindful of what you're feeling and thinking. And once you're beginning to be mindful of what your brain is presenting to you, you can become conscious of your thoughts and question them. You can ask yourself, is what I'm thinking true? One of the things that is common is when infidelity is discovered, begin to going into the story that it's all been a lie. You know, my husband or my wife never loved me, never loved the kids. Another one is, it's all my fault. I'm at fault. I'm not enough, or I'm too much of something, or contrary, it's all his fault or her fault, whoever the spouse is. And another really dangerous thought that we don't even know we're thinking, don't examine, is it true, is my life's over. So once we begin to look at, is it true, then what we can do next is say, what is true about my spouse? Has this spouse been a good parent, regardless of this infidelity? Does the spouse contribute to the family? Are they wonderful providers, either emotionally or in humor or music or time, energy? Has this person, other than this fidelity, have they been a good partner? Do I have a good time with them? Do I love their humor? And have they been there thick and thin? If there's been illness in you or your family members or your kids, have they been there? And all of this is really can be worked out once you start journaling. And they're private journals. It doesn't matter if it's full sentences, if your spelling's right. It's just for you. And it really helps you process your emotions.
Can I jump in there? Because please. I think that's a great idea. There are some people for whom that really works well. You can put your deepest, darkest feelings in there, and it's private. Nobody else knows, and you can just move on, get rid of it almost by writing it. But that's for some people. For other people, journaling is a horrible chore. The last thing they would want to do would be to write it down. And really, for those people, it might be best for them not to have all these churning thoughts, not to be thinking about, oh, he's terrible, and I did this, and if I would have done this, then maybe it would have been different. You really want to find things to fill your mind so that you don't have the mental space for all those churning thoughts. And so for certain people, rather than writing things down in a journal, although I think it's a very valid technique, for some people, it might be better for them to just find other interests that they love, find their passion, go outside, volunteer for helping people who are disadvantaged to take your mind off your own problems. Go and smell the roses, go and go for a hike in beautiful outdoors, find an interest, learn a language, meet new people, regain your friendships with people that you've let go while you've been stuck in a marriage where you've had your nose to the grindstone dealing with house, kids, business, whatever it is. So I think that that also is very important. For certain people, it's not always a good idea just to be wallowing in the motions and trying to write everything down and well, I feel like this, I feel like that. You want to have something fill your mind so you don't even have those thoughts. So, I'm going to be doing this. This is great. You know, you need to find your passion. And it in some ways, going through this kind of emotional roller coaster and lack of trust and betrayal is a kick in the pants to think, life is short. How do I want to live the rest of my life and be fulfilled with or without a partner?
So picking and choosing what we're talking about and what's going to work with you is up to you. We're offering you a number of opportunities of things that you can experiment with and things you can play with so you can find out what works. And CJ mentioned physical exercise. She mentioned get outside, get into nature. CJ, there's something that you bring up in your book about meditation, and I laughed at this one because you introduce a fun exploration of meditation using chocolate. I'm a giant chocolate fan. So could you say a quick minute about your chocolate meditation?
Yes, what it is an exercise for mindfulness that has worked on children in schools in Britain. So if it can work on kids, it can work on you. And what it is that you have a piece of chocolate wrapped up, something like a Hershey's Kiss or one of those Lindor balls, something like that. And you go through, first of all, looking at it, feeling it in your hand, opening it up, hearing the crinkles, and finally smelling it, putting it in your mouth, and then slowly eating it. And each stage, you are focusing entirely on that sense. You've got the visual, looking at it. You've got the oral, hearing it. You've got the nasal, smelling it. And then you've got the touch of the thing in your hand when you're opening it up and when you're feeling the lint ball or whatever it is you're eating, and then you've got the taste of it in your mouth. And all of these are opportunities to learn how to do something mindfully so that you haven't got 500 thoughts going on at the same time. You're focusing entirely on that. And it really is a great exercise for being mindful. And what it leads to is living in the present, because for many people, even if they don't have unfaithful husbands and wives, they're not living in the present. They're churning about what they've done in the past, they're worrying about what might happen in the future, and they certainly are not living in the present. And all you have is the present moment. What happened in the past is gone. What happens in the future, who the hell knows? All you have is the present.
So what a great way to give yourself an excuse to have chocolate and introduce yourself to meditation at the same time. And as you're discovering what you want for you, and you're making time and investing in new, perhaps, passions and pursuits, if there's a voice in you saying, wait, you can't do that, you're too busy with the kids, or you're too busy at work, I want you to recognize if there's time and money for your spouse to have an affair, then there's time and money for getting a babysitter for an hour a week, or an hour a day, what your budget allows. There's time and money for you to take a class. It could be online. Time and money for being alone, for perhaps a massage. So we're going to take a look at, we've given you ideas on how to manage those emotions.
Can I just jump in and add something there, Lise?
Mm-hmm. Please.
You know, I think that I love, CJ, the way you talk about taking this incredibly painful and difficult situation and using it as an opportunity to explore yourself and your interests. And, you know, so often you get married and then there are kids and so many things go on the back burner. And I know that when we talk to our clients going through divorce, regardless of what got them there, a lot of times you start asking these questions to them and they can't even figure out, like, what am I passionate about? What am I interested in? They've been so nose to the grindstone. And so if you're listening and you're thinking, God, I just can't think about anything except this terrible trauma that just hit, that makes sense. And yet there's this opportunity to really begin to explore. And if there's nothing that you can think about now, like, what did you enjoy doing as a child? Was there something artistic? Was there something outdoors? And because I think there are those people who have a laundry list and not enough years. And then there are those people who struggle and they're kind of stopped in their footprints and saying, I don't know what to do. I really don't know what to do. And it's okay if that's your first thought, because you can begin to explore. And if you do so with curiosity and adventure and with perhaps a couple of good friends, you will begin to find new interests. And expanding in that way is going to be healing and brilliant for you, no matter what you ultimately decide to do. That's the part I love about what your book says too, CJ, is that it's going to enhance your life regardless of what that decision ends up being.
That's so true, Karen. And one of the problems that so many women have is that they spend so much of their life energy looking after their family. It's great that they do that, looking after the husband, looking after the children. And it's time to look after yourself. When this kind of thing happens to you, it's time to use it to look after yourself. It's going to make you more complete. It's going to make you more productive in the long run. And there are so many ways you can try and find interests if you really aren't sure what you'd like to do. There's volunteering that I've mentioned before for all kinds of different groups, getting involved in your church if that's something that is of interest to you. There are groups like meetup.com, for instance, where people have groups for any kind of interest, depending on what location you're urine. And you can find that you build a whole new circle of friends and a whole new set of skills and interests just by doing those kinds of things. Look after yourself. It's time to put you first. Probably you haven't done that for years if you've been in a long relationship. I mean, we're all stuck in our Protestant ethic. Whatever religion we belong to, we're stuck in this Protestant ethic of being diligent, thrifty, looking after the home, looking after the family. Take a step back and look after yourself.
As you can hear with this topic, there are so many ways to explore it. And we want you to know that if you're feeling like we're just touching on certain subjects and you'd like more, listen to our podcast series. Get CJ's book, because you'll be able to go into much greater depth about many of the things, if not all of the things we're talking about. I'd like to begin. We've talked about managing your emotions so you're not making decisions out of a very reactive place. Well, if you're not going to make these decisions in spur of the moment, then you're going to be living with someone who you no longer trust while you're trying to figure out what's next, what's real, what's best. And in order to do that, you need to carve out and create some separate space within your home and your life for yourself as you think and feel all these very confusing and painful feelings and facts that are being uncovered out. And I've got some tips I want to share for explaining your need for space to your spouse without attacking the spouse. You've got an explosive situation almost any day, and striking a match and throwing it in there with insults really helps it catch on fire and blow. And it's super unhealthy for you, any children in the house, to come to a rational and strategic decision about what you're going to do. So first, consider using I statements. I statements like, look, I need space. I want us to live in separate bedrooms for a while or separate parts of the house because our relationship is not what I thought it was. Or I need to feel and think out how I feel. This is new. It's raw. It's a shock to me. I need space about for myself. I'm in shock, quite honestly. Saying I'm giving myself space to do what I need to do to incorporate what I've just found out about our relationship. And also having the courage to say, I'll initiate touch. You know, I'm not saying this is forever, but for now, I'll initiate intimacy or touch when I feel ready. So, you know, please be patient. You've been doing what you've been doing. And now I need space and time to do what I need to do for me. So if setting up a separate place for you or your spouse to sleep temporarily, it's a way to communicate that without it feeling like a rageful rejection of that other person. And then with the kids, you know, explaining why mommy and daddy are sleeping separately if there are kids in the house needs to be done with a lot of loving kindness and compassion, and it needs to be age appropriate. And once again, trying to draw a wedge in the children's minds about, you know, the adulterer is the bad one and I'm the good one. While it makes so much sense out of the pain you're feeling, it will damage the kids. And they're counting on you for their well-being. They're too young to create it for themselves. So another pointer is leave the other man or woman out of your mind as much as possible and out of your discussions, other than, you know, really being clear with the adulterer are you willing to give this relationship up? Because whether they are or they're not is going to make an enormous difference in where you go next. And when I say leave the other person, the third wheel, out of your mind in your discussions, part of this is revenge. The need for revenge is so strong, so very powerful. And CJ, you speak to revenge very powerfully in your book.
Revenge is a huge emotion that comes up when you've been betrayed. And the mantra of my book, Adulterous Wife, How to Thrive Whether You Stay or Not, is that revenge is not sweet. The best revenge is to get past the need for it. And it certainly doesn't help you look after your own interests. So you can have all kinds of revenge scenarios in your mind, which actually I think is a waste of time and a waste of energy to even have them in your mind. But if you start to try to act on anything like that, all it will do is make your situation worse. In a counterintuitive type of kind of way, some of the most successful strategies are things like forgiveness and gratitude. Doesn't that sound dreadful, though, when you're going through all this stuff? But if you can forgive your husband for what he's done, you're going to have a much better chance of being able to repair the relationship if he's willing to give up the other woman. If he's not willing to give up the other woman, that's a completely different story. There are not so many women who are going to be happy with that scenario. And in a lot of cases, when people do stay together with the husband obviously philandering and continuing to philander, those are situations where the woman really doesn't want it to happen, but doesn't want to leave the relationship, and she's caught between a rock and a hard place.
This takes us to our final point that we're going to look at today. And I want you, again, in our podcast, we've got entire hours of conversations about how you get to the advanced place of forgiveness or non-judgment. It's if you're not there, it's completely understandable. If even thinking about it makes your skin cringe and your fists are held tight and you notice you're clamping your jaw, just relax. It's advanced, and we're not focusing on that right at this moment, as important as it is. We're talking about the just discovered phase.
Yeah, and before we jump into the next phase, I want to dovetail something that CJ said on the forgiveness end. The truth is that whether you're deciding to stay or go, unforgiveness is just an anchor around your neck, and regardless Absolutely. Of what you do going forward, forgiveness is, it's like the F word. We get it. It's like really, really hard, and the goal of forgiveness is as much for you, right, for cutting those ties that bind you to your pain and your bitterness and your resentment, all of these emotions which are going to diminish your life. It's going to be really hard to be enlivened and engaged in life while having those feelings. And so, you know, the idea of slowly moving in that direction. And in the beginning, it's just creating space and detaching from the story, detaching a little bit from the hurt. But regardless of what you decide to do, I think we would all agree on this show that it's vital for your own well-being. And if you're a parent, for your interaction with the kids, to be able to cut those ties and to let the unforgiveness go so that everybody can live healthier.
Great. Thank you, Kara. And we've touched on a few things now, moving us into the final topic we're going to be discussing in today's show. And that's, on what basis do you make a choice of whether to stay, whether to go? It can be overwhelming. And beginning to analyze what are the circumstances when you're assessing your options. Again, what's real? Is it the first infidelity? Have there been multiple infidelities? Is there a willingness to talk about it without being attacking or defensive on the part of your spouse or you? Is there a willingness for counseling from your spouse? Is the spouse saying, oh yeah, I'm sorry, but, or is there a true regret for what's occurred and the pain and the turmoil it's thrown the family in? Go ahead.
I'm curious. I know, CJ, that you interviewed a lot of people just on those questions that Lise just threw out. What do you see, and what did you find in the people that you spoke with?
Certainly, people can get together and one party can have an affair, but if the two spouses really want to be together, they can weather through it and they can have a good relationship afterwards. I've seen several relationships improve after infidelity. Woman that I knew, her husband met an old flame at a high school reunion, and he was off for about 2 years. But then he came back, and it seems like the pair are happier than they were before. But it really depends on the two people. You have to decide whether you are happier with the person or without them. Sometimes when you have an unfaithful husband, it is a symptom rather than a cause of a failing relationship. It's a dynamic between the two of you often that has created that situation. I came across quite a few celibate marriages. And, you know, if one spouse isn't getting fed at home, he's going to get himself or herself a takeout. And all kinds of situations like that. I even came across one circumstance where the woman really didn't feel like she had much in common with the man and had a very close friendship with another woman. This was not a sexual friendship, but it was almost like she had the affair first. And finally, when the man did stray after the wife not even wanting to go on holiday with him and going on vacations with the friend, then the wife is appalled and feels like, you know, she's been seriously betrayed. Well, in that circumstance, she's almost left him before he has. So there are all kinds of dynamics. I don't think there is a one-size-fits-all answer, all situation. There's so many variations out there.
I think that's such a great point. I think two things that I heard you say. One is very often there's the whole lead-up to the infidelity, which typically involves some brokenness in the relationship. You know, not to talk about fault or blame, but you were just describing an emotional or a physical or a sexual abandonment or lack of in those areas that leads somebody astray. And I think the other side of it that I heard you speak to is if you're going to mend your marriage after infidelity, there has to be two parties who are on board to do that, two parties who are willing to both look at what they need to do in terms of forgiveness and even what was going on before the infidelity. So both owning the brokenness in the marriage before the infidelity and then what needs to happen. If there's one party who really wants to make the marriage work and the other person isn't doing any of the heavy lifting, that's a pretty big red flag. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, that's true. And Karen, I have come across relationships where the marriages have stayed intact after infidelity, but you look at them and it's purgatory there because the husband is consumed with guilt and the wife still doesn't trust and is always looking over her shoulder expecting the man to stray. Those marriages are not real marriages. Those are, sharing a life, sharing a house together, but that's not a healthy relationship.
Yeah, that's almost like living under the same roof. I do want to just take this minute. There's a program I went through. I did not experience infidelity. That's not what led to my divorce. But I went through a program. I don't know if you've heard of it, CJ. It's called Retrovi. And it, back in the day in the 70s and 80s, Marriage Encounter was really very well known, and Retrovi is an arm of that. And it's the most amazing program because it takes couples through 30 hours over 3 days. And I went with my ex, and we saw so many people with infidelity, like severe betrayal, multiple betrayal, and the people getting up and giving testimony had gone through that, and they found their way back to each other. And just as you described, they said that it is sweeter, it is stronger, it is more passionate, the foundation is more solid than we ever could have hoped for or imagined in our whole lives. And so if you're out there and you have a spouse who is saying, I'm sorry, and I do want to work on it too, and I know it's just an incredibly difficult journey and you feel like you're scaling a really high mountain, the program Retrovi is incredible. And it you can get through this and get to the other side and have the best marriage ever. You do need two people totally full in to make it happen.
And talking about being full in, there's an aspect of that where the people in the relationship, whether they want to work with it or whether you have a spouse that doesn't, taking full, assuming responsibility for not only your actions, but your relationship and what's happening to it, not guilt, not blame, but assuming responsibility is so very important. And there's a concept, it's a Hawaiian practice that CJ introduces in the book. It's called Ho'oponopono. I don't know if I'm saying that exactly right, CJ.
Yes, you have to embrace your glottal stop there because it's got the ohina in it. Ho'oponopono. And really what it means is that you do create your own reality, which some people might find a little bit of a way out concept. But just imagine going to a party, you're in a lousy mood, you've had something happen to you that really didn't make you happy. Somebody else goes to the party, they've just won an award, they've just got into the college they really wanted to get into. Look at the different attitudes those two people are going to have towards that party and towards the people they meet at the party. You carry around these attitudes, these emotions in your head, and they affect how you deal with other people, how much you like or dislike certain things that happen. And so you do create your own reality. You can make your life worse or better just by what's in your head.
Well, and that's what we talk about throughout our entire 12-step divorce recovery series. And in fact, you know, if what CJ is saying is speaking to you and you're listening right now, step two of the 12-step talks exactly about just stepping back and noticing your thoughts and noticing the stories that you create and the emotions that follow that. And back to mindfulness, this is... out of trauma, out of devastation comes opportunity. And one of the opportunities is to live more consciously, to be more mindful of the way that you think and behave. And that's a lot of what our 12-step program talks about. I think it's very much aligned with so much that you speak about throughout your book, CJ. And so if you're listening and you haven't yet gotten to our 12-step series, go back and take a look. You'll find a lot of value there.
Ultimately, your health and well-being is a byproduct of your relationship with yourself, first and foremost, before you begin to look at your relationship with your spouse, someone else. So I want to talk to you a bit, introduce you to some ongoing support. We've touched on things in topics in The Adulterer's Wife. But the book is out there. There's so much more in it than we were able to get to today. I know CJ talks about the book being not, it's not therapy or revenge. It's how to use your shock and anger to take back power and gain independence. And as she said earlier, the book speaks to, the sweetest revenge is to get past the need for it.
I would love to just ask CJ. CJ, do you have any last thoughts that you want to leave our audience with before we wrap up and say goodbye?
Yes. Although burying revenge and going towards forgiveness, all of these things seem very, very difficult at the beginning, there is no substitute for the passage of time and for actively trying to make your circumstances better than they were before. You have to think, I am going to get through this. I will not be a victim. And my husband or wife is not a demon, but I am going to get beyond this and come to a place where I am in a better space than I was before. It is doable. And you have to have that idea in your head, even as you are suffering the devastation of the infidelity right when it's happened. And that's the message of Adulterer's Wife, How to Thrive, Whether You Stay or Not. It is a catalyst for making your life better. You can either be crushed by adversity or it can rise you up.
I love that.
It's great.
CJ, it was so nice having you here, and what a great show. And
thank you.
I really appreciate what you're doing, and I'm really excited about our listeners picking up your book and reading it. Again, CJ, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.